lecture of our series. I want to start with a word of thanks for us to have Rabbi Lichtenstein here tonight.
And a great introduction because he's well known throughout the whole world, actually, not only in Israel and the United States. His influence on Jewish students and religious life in Israel is well known, as well as the students that go through a program in Israel, then come to the United States and are imbued with Torah and knowledge and intellectual curiosity, and continue this in their daily life. It's really a great pleasure for me tonight to call upon Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein to deliver our lecture.
Ben Mordasso, Wagner, with chairman, ladies and gentlemen. Gushin quotes a braise, Tanya, Rebbe Eimer, Golu v'yoduas nishoma v'oyer ha'olot, Shabon mechabed es imo yosu me'ovi, מפני שמשדר אותו בדבורי פיקטים הקדוש ברוך הוא כיבוד אב וכיבוד אק וידוע לפני שום עבור יהודו ומציאו ומאובי יוסר מאימו לפני שמלמד אותו לפי חוק פיקטים הקדוש ברוך הוא מובו האור למובו האק The son is inclined to honor, to cherish his mother more than his father because she fondles him, she spoils him. Therefore, the pasuk which speaks in the mitzvah of Kibu, father is mentioned before the mother. Likewise, it is well known to the Ben Shleiro, child fears the father more than the mother. Father disciplines him in the process of teaching him Torah. Therefore, Pasuk which speaks in the mitzvah, fear of the parent, Ish Aviv Imo, Imo Aviv Tirol, there the Pasuk in reverse has father mentioned after. This minor, cited in summary by Rashi in Pashas Doshim, is similar to most. Himself in the sporadic sequences of the psukim, with the fear and honor of parents respectively, receiving priority in the form, while the father is cited first in the latter, it suggests that the Torah has made allowances for natural tendencies to compensate for them. In each case, emphasizing precisely that which runs counter to ordinary inclination. Weak, counterbalancing proclivity, then we'll talk its applications. This is, of course, equally valid with respect to the world of thought in general. Speaking of human self-esteem, Pascal writes, if he shall find himself, I shall abase him. Abase himself, I shall uplift him. Until he understands, he learns minister and comprehensive. And he's an incomprehensible personal note. I often find that my position, professional as well as ideological, may at times perhaps necessitates me, seemingly contradictory, and yet ultimately complementary views and audiences. Trying to maintain and expound perspectives which are multifaceted, because my purpose is not only exposition, but I find myself espousing different sides of the same issue. Sometimes, for instance, if you denigrate the mandate implicit in the possible gracious, Hashem Elokim is Adam, and Yenichem is Gan Eden, Avdu and Shamra. The Ben Yisraelim took man and placed him in the Garden of Eden. But preserve it. Criticizing that is to those who denigrate man's duty to God, develop the world. So, material base to meet us. Trusting to those who minimize the centrality of spiritual attainment, you mean Torah, Ein Kemach. The Sabbath blames very existence of the world, obviously, in order that Torah exists and be studied. And why do the Paschim in the Yom, in the Blissi Yom of Aloyla, Chukeshma, Avoret for something? Well, it's not from a covenant day and night, but we not have established the laws of heaven and earth. I was confronted by students present at the perspective, hopefully gung-ho and military service, often seek to dampen their fervor, underscoring the spiritual charge of our tradition, downgrading the importance of army duty, which is after all only an unfortunate necessary means to an end. But that end is Torah, Torah, and more Torah. The others, into whom the latter message has been insultingly and almost exclusively drilled, is reversed back. Sorry, I was reminded that. Don't you recall the Gemara in Yevon? The Torah, to the Torah, frankly thinks that there is nothing but Torah. Doesn't even possess Torah itself. If you realize that ideally Torah must be Torah's chesed, but preaching to intellectualists and intellectuality to the pietists, to attain the complex balance which I regard as the essence of a comprehensive. This remarks with this brief introduction, so a balance is the essence of this evening's message. My contention that with respect to such central issues, present and future respectively, the prevalent conception of that future, different emphases exist within different segments of the Jewish and Torah community. And that we would be well advised to press upon each the significance of that which he is inclined keeps the makos. Not knowing, however, although I can perhaps hazard intelligent guess, because perforce attempt to present the total picture. Don't know how many of you vividly recall the passage near the end of Macbeth from which perhaps pretentiously and presumptuously the title for this lecture. If you do recall, you'll note that informed that his wife, the Queen of Dawn, responds, by the laughter. It wasn't a time for such a word. From day to day, the last syllable of recorded time. Now yesterday's the lighted fools, but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts his precious hour upon the stage, and then, from a critical point of view, Shakespeare generally is regarded as the timeless bard of the human spirit, as bestriding like a colossus the transition from pre-17th century medieval and Renaissance culture. Regards this passionate outburst in particular, inasmuch as he is a dramatist, it is not necessary, since any other mitzvah from Tzaro, a person can have held fully accountable of that which he says in a moment of crying, even if that should indeed interest us, it can be regarded as Macbeth's final word. The outburst per se, taken in itself, is decidedly unmodern in tone and substance. Holding together of all our yesterdays and shade of tomorrows, from the road to dusty death, to what, broadly speaking, one abhors such generalizations in this context are unavoidable, speaking may be described as the modern spirit. The modern world is by and large optimistic. his point of view, perhaps superficially so, subjectively speaking, optimistic. By dazzling scientific and technological advances, has far more than its predecessors the sense of being able to cope and ultimately master. Of the capacity, as Whitehead in Science of the Modern World noted, to understand the world, and inasmuch as the prime precursor of modernity, Francis Bacon, noted, knowledge is power, able gradually to extend control over it. To a great extent, Faustian appetites few share the unbridled hopefulness of Shelley's father-in-law, William Godwin, the spirit of hope at the popular level, even more than at the philosophic. Nihilism often has a different quality in this context. Secular nihilism is a very different order from the pre-modern variety. In your personal life, what, in terms analogous to the Avei Havolim, Kol Havel, or the early Prussian camp, rather, is a morally significant process of assertion. The bravado of Bertrand Russell on the one hand, and the genuine bravery of Albert Camus on the other. So that, from this point of view, self appears deeply religious, but in many respects regarded as an antecedent of contemporary existentialism, even as the universe crushes man, he triumphs over it because he, aux autres pensants, knows that he's being crushed. The zeitgeist of our century, marked by two cataclysmic wars, is different in the century of hope. The 19th century, to go back one further, that which is the matrix of what Carl Becker in a celebrated book called The Heavenly City of the 18th Century Philosophers. The gut feeling, and this I say, the lament of Arnold, spiritual parameters of modern culture notwithstanding, the heavenly feeling, again, especially the popular feeling, sense is directly bound up with the relation to different time frames. Our world is largely present and even more so future oriented. Both the thoughts of the past and attitudes to the past vary. Écraser l'histoire, strike out history, it's all one great mistake. Probably you could trash sharply with this. For all the interest in history, Francis and their successors generally do not see the past as the ultimate ideal or as the arbiter of the present. Not even in Ben Jonson's sense of guides, not commanders, but rather as the matrix out of which the culture had and would continue to evolve. The so-called battle of the books would improve, rise up against the ancients, not only their independence, but even their prospective superiority. That to which modernity is so much oriented, malleable, indeterminate, is full of promise. Hence to that modern man typically looks. What longing to recapture the temps perdu, of one kind or another, is fancy without concern to another characteristic. In show of cultural history, modern man is more this-worldly, more terrestrially oriented, and it attaches more value to the mundane, and is far more attuned to regarding it as his existential milieu. Within which we find our happiness, an extension and a constriction of horizons. But tomorrow, tomorrow, and tomorrow, of identical units within a sequence. However, Albert Hadrouch takes the liberty of speaking the lecture I thought too might be familiar, of course, is the pragmatic model, the time frame contiguous to the present, evolving more or less continuously from it. In both popular literary usage, literally to the following day. Now, this is by far the most common meaning to the equivalent term macho in Tanakh. As the parasha which is read in Purim at the end of the Shalach, macho and the Kim Tzavar Rosh HaGivah, tomorrow I shall stand. Or, as we read the same day of the Megillah, Nosem da macho lehudva to the Shushan, let the next day too be given the Jews of Shushan to clean up their persecutors. Sometimes, however, this contiguous tomorrow refer to a later date, as the concluding line of Lycidas, in which Milton speaks of the poet shepherd's dedicated determination to betake himself tomorrow to fresh woods and pastures new. Take perhaps more within the 30-day period of Kedem HaPesach, during which one engages in Hilchos Pesach, remind ourselves of Rashi's comments on the Pesach in Bo, V'hoyot Yisholcha Vincha Mocha Lemo Mazot, your child shall ask you on the morrow, what is this? Rashi explains, Yesh Mocha Shu Achsha, which is now, meaning literally the next day. It's macho, and there is a tomorrow, shulach hazman, which is somewhere in the future. Kegon zeh, such as this instance. Or kegon, the reference to Paskin Yeshua, macho yomru b'neichem livneinu, livnegod v'ruve. Discussion of Pasha and Negodim and Eruvain, and they wanted to implement it in Yeshua. So, other Shravna said to them, tomorrow your sons will say to our sons. But of course, what was meant was sometime in the future. In most cases, however, regardless of whether it's the Mochel Shalachsho, while dealing with a future which is related directly, rationally, operationally, pragmatically, to the present. In this respect, this first ordinary macho tomorrow is materially different from a second eschatological tomorrow. Tomorrow, the end of history, for the redemption of history, the continuation of the present, as its ultimate redemptive fulfillment. We deal not so much with a machar evolving from, emanating from Hayom, with a Bayom Ahu, another day, that day, contrasted with a Hayom Haseh. Hayom Ahu, Am Shemechot, Yishmoechot, Bayom Ahu, which is visionary, messianic, and psychologically, although hopefully not chronologically, Yimot. Machol of Yimot HaMashiach. Machol of days which, however conceived, and of course Hashem has different views, and Chazal have different views, about Yimot HaMashiach when you relate to the rest of history. But then again, this is the Machol of a period through and during which history, nature, and man attained the meta-historical redemption, as in Mola Horus Deus Hashem Kamayu La Yom Achas. It's covered by water. It's the second tomorrow. Finally, actually ahistorical and atemporal tomorrow. The Tachal evoked by Chazal, Rashi quotes himself, the Pasuk speaks of mitzvah to the present, Hayom Ha'asosom, to perform them today, Chazal comment, Hayom Ha'asosom, U'machol HaKabbiz Kor, to do them today, and to receive, to enjoy the rewards tomorrow. Tomorrow, that of the world of U'machol HaKabbiz Kor, to the transcendental realm of judgment, consequences of judgment, to beatific vision, to tzadikim yoshvim v'akoseyem v'rosheyem v'ne'enim ziv ha'shchina, crowns upon their heads, and partake of the glow of the Shechina. Water, the individual moves vertically, immediately, if you will, evidence by the famous description of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's deathbed trepidation in the Gemara in Brachos. Why is it that even when being brought before an ordinary ruler, the son wrote, ועכשיו שמוליכינו סליף למלך מלכי אנוכי בקדוש ברוך הוא שהוא חי וקיים לעולם ולאו מעולמי שאם כועס עליי כעסו כעס עולם ואם עוסרני איסורו איסור עולם ואם המסעני ניסוס וניסוס עולם ואין יוכל לפייס לבי דבורים ולא שחת בממון ולאור אל שיש לפן השני דרוכי, אחס של גן עדן ואחס של גהינום, ואין יודע באיזו מוליכים עושי, ולא אפשר. Now that the whole door, the Rebbeinu Shlom, the King of Kings, having an existence eternally, toward me, his anger is eternal, towards me, death is eternal. I cannot anyway win him over by words, nor bribe him with money. Moreover, the two poems of our American Testament, but tomorrow, of course, not only the sense that he may be dead in the next 24 hours, but tomorrow of moving immediately, as it were, that world. This macha, to which, at least on the Ramban's view, Ramban disagrees, the whole cosmos moves linearly and horizontally on its return to pre-creational animation of Pashmi Shalom, Rabbiti Alaret Mitacha, Yishamayim Choshenim Lochu, Roaret Kabeget Tivle. Yoshua Kmo Kenyi Musum, you fix your eyes heavenward. What the earth below? The smoke will vanish, and the garments will wither. likewise shall die of the individual, tomorrow's day. Tomorrow, which is continuous with it today, if literally Aksha, tomorrow responds the tomorrow of the transcendental world of ourselves, where does the modern world stand? The general answer can be clearly and briefly stated. Struck with a third, and it attains a particular perception of the second. Even its mundane and temporal bias, its polarity, concerned with more sensitive terms, it is of course very much involved with the present, and with the hereafter, as the teaching of the here and now. Still part of the picture. Belief in it, surely at the level of articulated dogmatism, often only on the periphery of consciousness. Outright discussion of eternity, all about it. Low high salute. Its attitude is often that which is reflected in the condescending irony wrote, and I quote, of mystics with divinity on their lips and with eternity on their fingers. Marvel addressing himself to, of all people, his core mistress, resonate echoes of impending eternity. To those lines 3 centuries later in the wasteland, you could only hear his back, the sound of motor cars. Let's ask ourselves, which modern statesman, soldier, courtier, poet could open the concluding sonnet of a sequence, as did Sir Philip Sidney, the end of Infortuny? And that never taketh rest, whatever fade. The second tomorrow, that of meta-history, and that, of course, persists, the optimism, and that's a very deep effect. Moreover, it takes 2 forms. This vision of a divine millennium on the one hand, the secular aspiration for humanistic utopia, however, a quality which distinguishes them, the Renaissance views of the latterly as an epiphanous divine revelation, as initiative, clearly disjunct from the continuous historical process, something which was almost ex machina, superimposed upon historical reality, but not growing out of it, not evolving, emanating from it. This yearning for a classless society, the longing for one grand divine event to which was created by Tennyson as the conclusion of In Memoriam, and see the redemption of history as he that basically, as Marx would have it, to that, towards that, the history moves. We have here prevalent modern views of varying tomorrows. Of course, we've been invited here not just to discuss modernity per se, modernity and Judaism, and Judaism, and Judaism. The prevalent assumption was, those who formulated the title for this series, two are, in some sense, very much in tandem. With reference to our particular topic, at any rate, the Hitler is the measure of opposition. No committed Jew can accept the largely secular and pragmatic bias of modern anthropocentric bent, placing man, rather than Rebbeinu Shloimeh, at the center of consciousness and existence. Relativistic moral, its temporal priorities. Torah HaShtafet can countenance the extent to which modernity ignores eternity, can accept the degree of preoccupation with material progress, with social engineering, with economic development. The surrender, however, and the measure of opposition, and it is and should be very, very significant. And you exist with respect to our problem. I'd like to survey these briefly, including by returning to my point of departure. You well know, on many issues, our Orthodox world is divided into two camps. Various denominators, Haredi, right, black, or what have you. However, we see the strong, modern, many of us don't like this bifurcation. We know that it exists. And we know that the terms formulated this way or that way do, after all, define respectively. There's an eye to this distinction. Myself, how do these two groups shape up respectively with regard to my time frames? Myself that. And lamentably, the both camps are, from my point of view, deficient, even derelict, but a different respect. The so-called Haredi community. It's very strong at the extremities of the spectrum. On the one hand, and Imachol HaKadosh Shchorom on the other. And collectively, in focusing upon present spiritual activity, upon intensive proletariat, upon a rigorous halachic observance, upon unswerving faith and dogmatic fidelity. The yeshivas and Talmudei Torah are impressive, the intramural gmilus chasadim enviable, their concern for dvarim shebi kedusha profound and powerful. The eternity, too, is relatively strong. Far beyond the modern norm, they entertain a clear sense, both intellectual and existential, of man's ultimate destiny. There's still a far, far cry, but pretty much without qualification, an interesting observation my brother Reb Chaim once made. While he had davened in the Parvash Yeshiva and Yom Nevoim a number of times, yet to encounter a sense of genuine terror within the Haredi world until the collapse of the bank stock in 1983. Comparatively speaking, thus strive to realize the admonition of Akavya ben Mahalale. Three things. Viyata boli de aveiro. And you shall be prevented from engaging in sin. Know from whence you come to holy, whither you are headed. If the niya to osi mitei din v'cheshbo. To the intermediate phase. Which is in between. That could be not so much with regard to the mocho shel achsho,
the planning of the immediate future and acting towards its, and acting towards its implementation. Very definitely, however, with regard to the Mocho Shel Ach HaZman, if we take that term to refer to the eschatological and meta-historical tomorrow of ultimate Jewish, human, and cosmic redemption. Anxious anticipation of Yemei HaMashiach, Tzipisa LeYeshua, in accordance with the question formulated in the Gemara in Shabbos, that certainly exists. Concentration upon Torah and mitzvahs as capable, among other things, of hastening the Geula, that surely obtains. But at the operational level, the sense that anything is being done, practically and rationally speaking, to advance that Geula, that sense is almost wholly absent. In part, because some of the relatively material components which comprise aspects of the messianic reality, and those aspects to which we can presumably begin to address ourselves, for instance, the reunification of Knesset Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, the restoration of Jewish sovereignty, the enhancement of nature, the stimulation of social equality, these are not amongst the top priorities within this community. Not all that highly esteemed. The Morris comment in Sanhedrin, Rama Rabbi Abbe, Ein lecho keitz megula mizeh, שנאמר ואתם הוי ישראל אנפכם תיסעו ופיריכם תיתנו תיתנו לעם ישראל. Don't have a clearer sign of Yemes HaMashiach, that which is stated in the Pesuk in Yechezkel, for addressing imaginatively the mountains of Israel. Novi says, you, the mountains of Israel, you shall lift up your branch and give your fruit to my people Israel. That comment lies largely beyond the pale, beyond the ken of Haredi mentality. In part, this dimension is ignored for another reason. It is dismissed because, by and large, the conception of the division of labor between man and the Rebbeinu Shlom history is such that it is assumed in defiance of the Rambam, but perhaps in consonance with popular thought, surely, and of a number of Rishonim. It is assumed that Bias HaMashiach, or from this point of view, perhaps one should rather say Havas HaMashiach, is wholly within the purview of the Rebbeinu Shlom. And thirdly, in large measure, although here cause and effect intermesh, there is an additional factor of the divorce from Tanakh and the world of Nevuah, which is unfortunately so characteristic of the Haredi Torah world. There is little in the way of imaginative vision of limiting the contours of an ideal world, much less of acting on its behalf. The sensuous world, by contrast, is generally in the reverse position. In consonance with its link to modernity, is deeply animated by a sense of historical fulfillment. And, particularly Nazi Israel, strives, often shallowly, but nevertheless genuine, to advance, to enhance its realization. Its contribution to Kibbutz Goliath and the resettlement of Eretz Yisrael, to the incipient rejuvenation of Mamlechet Yisrael, to unprecedented Kibbutz Goliath, all this is a matter of impressive record. That record has been achieved, moreover, not merely out of a desire laudable in its own right to help fellow Jews in distress, but out of commitment to tikkun olam, to changing, transforming, transmuting the world, out of a sense that all of these activities, this is of course central to the perception of religious Zionism, broadly speaking, all this is done out of a sense that these are somehow steps in a redemptive process on the way to the realization of national and universal destiny. Out of a longing for a day, the Melech HaMashiach, as Rambam describes, Yisakein, Sa'ulam, Kulo, Lav, with Hashem Beyacha, Shenemar, Oh, therefore, Chalamim, Sofer, Ruah, Nikro, Kulam, Shem Hashem, Ulav, Doshchem Echo. Malach HaMashiach shall transform, prove, fix the entire world, serving Ben Shem together, as it is written, then I shall turn the nations clear voice, call all of them the name of God, and to serve Him in unison. This commitment and the resolve and sacrifice that have manifested it is admirable and surely speaks to the credit of the census world and is a testament to its aspirations. However, that world is often palpably deficient, and this again, perhaps in consonance with its links to modernity, with respect to two other elements, Hayom La'asosam, and secondly, the sense of Umachol HaKabitzchor. At one pole, there is insufficient appreciation of the inherent significance of Torah mitzvahs lishma, per se, quite independent of their ramifications. There is excessive inclination to ascribe significance to today only in the light of its contribution to tomorrow. Some years back, I delivered and subsequently published a lecture which dwelt upon this last point. And inasmuch as the intervening decade has only much sharpened my sense of its import, permit me briefly to quote an essay of Tarich Yisrael Historia, Process and Culmination of History. בשבועות האחרונות שספרו על הרנסאנס כתב וולטר פיילו, הסופר האנגלי שדגל בתורת האמנות השם אמנות. פילינג ריינס, the book of the Renaissance, וולטר פיילו, English author, champion art for art's sake, writes, well, we are all condamné, as Victor Hugo says. We are all in the status of death with a sort of indefinite retreat. We have an interval, and then our place knows us no more. Some spend this interval in listlessness. Some in high kashrut. The wisest, at least among the children of this world, in art and song. Of this wisdom, poetic passion, desire of beauty, the love of art for art's sake has most. For art comes to you, proposing frankly to give nothing but the highest quality to your moments as they pass, and simply for those moments' sake. I commented, "Ein Yehudi yechol hashlim kemuvan imhamadat hashifal hayofi vavat hamanut v'shem hamanut v'piskat harachim oy magdaratan kimtoch chachmat hachayim." החשה לגישת פיידר לזמן ולחוויה לא כגישה בלעדית, אך כגישה אחת הכרחית, אני סומך שתי ידיי עליה. בדיוק. תן האיכות הגבוהה ביותר להיגרח כשהם חולפים, ופשוט לשם אותם רגעים. אלו כמובן, לא למען התוכן הנעתי, רומנות שבהם, אלא בשם עבודת הבורא שבהם. תפיסה זו מושתתת על זיקה עמוקה למצוות אהבת השם. מצווה זו תובעת בין היתר את מסכות חוש הבריחו, ועבודתו ללא כל קשר עם תוצאותיה דרישון שכר ועונש עובד. שם התאמר אומרת הביתה בספרי, היינו למד תורה בשביל שיהיה עשיר, בשביל שיהיה רבי, בשביל שיהיה שכר לעולם הבא. תמיד אמר לאהבה את השם, כל מה שאתם עושים לא תעשו לו מאהבה. גם יש להגיש שהניתוק מפעולת תוצאותיה אינו צריך להצטמצם לשכר היחיד. הוא חייב להקיף לא פחות הבטחות כלל ישראליות, יהודים היסטוריים וחזון אסקטולוגי. היום לעשותם, ויהיה המחר מה שיהיה, אם יהיה. וזה ביחס לביאת המשיח, לא פחות מאשר ביחס למנת לביאתם. But you cannot, of course, come to terms or accept the positioning of the aspiration for beauty and the love of art for art's sake at the apex of our values or with the definition of the source of the wisdom of life. But as far as Plato's approach to time and experience, not as the exclusive approach, but surely as a necessary approach, I fully accept that which he said. Precisely. Give the highest quality to your moments as they pass, and simply for those moments' sake. But of course, not for the element of pleasure art that is in them, but for the sake of the service of the Rebbeinu Shleilam, which is realized in them. This conception is grounded in a profound link to the mitzvah of the love of God. That mitzvah requires, among other things, total commitment to the Rebbeinu Shleilam and his service without any regard the consequences at the plane of personal reward and punishment. Lest you say, says the Baisin Sifri, I shall learn Torah in order to become wealthy, in order to be called a rabbi, in order to receive rewards in the world to come. So the pasuk enjoins you Ma'avos Hashem, in order to love the Rebbeinu Shleilam, all which you do, you shall do solely out of love. The
is the point I was emphasized as a disjunction between the act and its consequences, not to be confined to personal reward. It needs to include no less national reward, historical destiny, eschatological vision. Yom Rasosa, today, to perform them, and may the moral be whatever it may be, if indeed it shall be. And this, with regard to the coming of the Messiah, no less than with respect to a portion of the Gefilte Yosef. This is one point. The excessive inclination to value today only insofar as somehow it is the building block of tomorrow. The other extreme, having failed here to appreciate sufficiently the significance of Yom Rasosa, the centrist of modern Orthodox Jew generally fails to apprehend fully the import of Umocha Olakabir Schor. It is not properly attuned to the echoes of eternity. It is not suffused with the sense of his being called and ultimately judged. It does not take sufficient note of the transiency of life or of its being, in Keats' phrase, the veil of soul making. Confronted with the Mishnah and others, Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Olam Hazeh Doma Lifrozdo Bifnei Olam Abo, Haske Natsucha Bifrozdo Kdei Shtikonos Tikrakli. Rabbi Yaakov says this world is compared, this resembles a vestibule in comparison to the world to come. Prepare yourself in the vestibule so that you should be able to enter the palace. The modern Jew is more likely to be animated by the prospect of the Masakin the Prezder fixing up the vestibule than by the exhortation to mend himself. So, I find the problem in both communities. In the way of our introduction, I'm certain you intuit what is to be my conclusion. There is need, significant need, for redress in both camps. To my contrary in the Haredi world, I urge, expand the imaginative, historical, and operational horizons. Learn to think, act, and feel in broader national and universal categories. Harken back to Yishayahu and Micha, to the Yoshu Ish Tachas Gatno, Tachas Teinoso, Ve'im Machmid, Yifi Hashem Tzvokis Diber, Micha's message, and they shall sit, each under his vine and his fig tree, without fear, for the voice of the Lord Tzvokos has spoken. O Yishayos, lo yurei v'lo yashchisi b'chol har kodshi, ki mol haaretz deyos Hashem kemayim l'yam achatim. They shall do no wrong, be no destruction in all of my holy mount, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the seabed with water. Realize, experience chesed, socio-historical ispashtus, extension, out of which Olam Chesed Yibana, out of which the world is built,
just an interpersonal assistance within the clubby confines of your own neighborhoods. Geographical concentration, develop a sharper sense of collective historical responsibility. Don't just live in history. Live historically. To my friends in the centrist world, I exhort, bear in mind that the last Novi commands Zichru Toras Moshe Avdin Asher Tzivisi Osu Becholev Al Kol Yisrael Chukim U'Mishpatim. Remember the Torah of Moshe my servant, that which I commanded unto him in the Cholev for all of Israel, laws and ordinances. Greatly intensify the level of learning at the Torah Institution. The price in Torah that we are presently paying for whatever you're adding to it is far in excess of what is practically requisite or ideologically desirable. Place greater stress upon individual spiritual development. Raise standards of knowledge and observance of halacha. Sound the transcendental notes loud and clear. Appreciate modernity, if you will, but only through the prism of eternity. Lest I be misunderstood, let me emphasize I do not long for the homogeneous amalgamation of the two camps which will somehow meet at the median should they accept my advice to move in the respective directions. I very much believe that there can be differing embassies within the world of Eretz Yisrael. Beyond a certain point, be the kuna of which we read this week's parsha should be the b'china of a lava shakoin midol vaad shiukim midasa. The kohen shall wear a garment, cloth, which as Chazal say, should be in accordance with his size. Moreover, circumstances differ. I take the Nesilas Yisharim's statement that it is incumbent upon a person to know leida machavosu be'alomai, what is his duty in this world, to mean that one must not merely know, in quasi-Kantian terms, the import of duty in general, but that one must know the specific contours of duty the Ola knows in his world. And I presume, Nifra Meshi Chaim Mitzata, the author of Mitzvah Sushore, that of duty writing novels, he did not regard that as universal obligation. I fully subscribe to F.H. Bradley's development of this theme in his essay, My Station and Its Themes. But I believe that the mutual redress I have encouraged would leave each camp own identity, clearly preserved, but pure and stronger. And the Klal Yisrael as a whole will be significantly richer, spiritually, and even materially. Having addressed the Tehoche in two directions, I may not have a friend left in the house. Yet, seeing the truth and trying to present it as I do, I conclude with Tennyson, I sing because I must.
In no way
have served to prevent the Intifada. If anything, it was in many respects provocative. I think it is preposterous to imagine that that handful of people who were there would have had any significant measurable effect in stopping the Intifada. I think that is simply an illusion. I understand why people entertain it, but I think that it's totally unrealistic. With regard to the latter portion of your remarks, I am a very, very great admirer of Baron Soloveitchik. He was a rebbe of mine long before he was a relative of mine, so I could admire him truly. But on certain matters, I don't agree with him. And this is one of them. Not has to show him with regard to our moral rights and our psychological rights. All of that, I fully agree. But that is not the issue. The issue that is raised today, to the extent of the question of the fair compromise will come up, is not whether we have a moral right, a psychological right, or a legal right, or a historical right to Maase Machpelah. I subscribe to that as Rav Aaron does, as every Jew is open to Pesach Chumishta. The question is similar to that which confronted Avraham Avinu. After all of us Israel have been given to Avraham Avinu. And nevertheless, he did not feel that he needed immediately to exercise that right. And he recognized that there were certain circumstances which perhaps made it advisable to pursue another means. And to confine himself to taking just a little part of Israel. And letting the rest return to his descendants at some later stage. I don't think it's a question of whether we, Chas Hashem, whether we have the right, without a doubt. But the question is it wise, is it prudent to press for that right, and to press for it at what cost? The people who are living in Chas are going to make a certain contribution. I don't question that. But you know that they're able to live in Chevron at other people's expense. Other people have to do milu'im in Chevron. Other people have gotten kids in Chevron. And what are those people who have to sit there? Do I think that the presence of, within the heart of Chevron, of the community which is there, is a substantive contribution to our security? The answer is categorically no. It is
Jews have to spend many months in the course of a year in order to protect the people who are there. I will be extremely happy if Hebron should remain in our hands. But I don't delude myself for a moment that whether it will or won't will depend on whether a few dozen Jews, even 100 Jews, sitting in the middle of it. If we should be able to retain all of our Yisrael without having to give anything back, we will be able to retain Ramallah as well without Jews sitting in the middle of Ramallah. And if we'll have to return Ramallah, we may have to return Hebron. What's going on there at present has symbolic significance, it has emotional significance, and I admire the people who are there under very difficult conditions, and who are themselves in some measure of danger. But I think it is totally unrealistic to assume that in terms of diplomacy, a military standpoint, in terms of what lies down the pike, that particular Hityashvut is going to contribute anything. It is a source of constant tension and friction. It is not a source of genuine, healthy growth and maybe a bit beyond that, of the kehila, the community with which you live, there is far less a sense at the level of aspiration and goals of dealing with a much broader context, trying to move, as spoken to us, the whole creation, or even move all of Klal Yisrael as an active program. I mean, there is the help, you can be misspelled about it. As an active program, I think there is not very much of that. And there is also very little sense that where and when you live is measurably significant in terms of your priorities. There is generally a kind of level conception that the priorities are always the same. Now, I will grant that the degree of sameness, from our point of view, exceeds and should exceed the degree of change and difference. And if I address that to a person who is I say, by all means, the most olam, the permanent element, that is more important than the nuances of dovado. But I do believe that there are two parts to the pasuk. I interpret it this way, of course, so Sefer did. That there's the Choyim Osolam, that's the permanent element. But there is a sense of knowing where you are in history and what opportunities are afforded by being in that particular context. What duties grow out of that context. So it has to do both with an awareness of where you are and the implications for that, and also what kind of responsibilities you feel. Here again, there is here, I think, some difference between our Yisrael and the diaspora. The diaspora existence, by definition, is more insular. It must, as in her years, that the term kohol applies to Klal Yisrael in our Yisrael. Those who live within our Yisrael must equal kohol. Those who live outside law equal kohol. That, of course, doesn't mean that there aren't communities wherever you are. But there is a dimension of total national community which exists only in our Yisrael. And this is not a Zohar Chadrush, mind you. The Gemara earlier says Lahaloche, the Rambam, when he speaks of smicha as being possible only in our Yisrael, applies it Lahaloche. The Avraham Ezer, when he explains that Kiddush Hashem can be only in our Yisrael, applies it Lahaloche. So there is a sense in which this more collective and historical element is more prevalent in our Israel than it is in the diaspora. And this, of course, gets back to the previous point that to some extent the Haredim are still living psychologically in the diaspora. Being in our Israel has not really made all that much of a difference to them and for them. I think it should. Without the second question that you asked, am I satisfied as far as this particular point is concerned about the dissenters of Shivas are teaching this message? I think by and large they're teaching it better than Haredi terrorist institutions. There are many, many things that Haredi institutions teach much better. And I greatly bemoan the fact that in terms of Shia Lundus, be it in the extent of knowledge, the depth of knowledge, and so on, that centers and institutions do not make a much greater effort to attain levels that they could attain. And I mentioned this before. But as far as your particular question is concerned, I think that on this score, they do manage to convey that sense better. Yes.
I want to thank Rabbi Lichtenstein for a very enlightening lecture, and we'll welcome you again.